Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. The conversation continues with interventional cardiologist Richard Kovach, MD, about hypertension's threat and how to keep it at bay, as well as treating and managing it after diagnosis. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay. What to do about hypertension, also known as high blood pressure? It stresses the cardiovascular system all the way down to the capillaries, and over time can lead to damage anywhere in the body. Deborah interventional cardiologist Dr. Richard Kovach talks us through the treatment and management options, including a recent therapeutic approach that reduces activity in the sympathetic nervous system. It's called renal denervation and involves disabling nerves in the kidney that in some people override drugs and lifestyle modifications. The overactive renal nerves get stuck in a fascinating feedback loop. The catheter-based procedure corrects that and essentially clears the way for healthy behaviors and medications to finally work to lower high blood pressure. Because with hypertension, control is the goal. Here's Dr. Kovach.
It's really a multifactorial disease. There's so many things contributing to it. And it's not like, well, I have hypertension, so I'm going to take my medications and I can still go eat 3 cheesesteaks and eat a bag of potato chips and not exercise and drink 12 cups of coffee a day. There are multiple aspects, multiple things that contribute to hypertension that need to be managed in order to effectively control it.
Okay, so treating high blood pressure. We hear about the pharmaceutical solutions. Once you've established that somebody, yeah, you really have a hypertension problem and we have to work on it, you would start with the lifestyle changes that you discussed. But if you need to go the pharmaceutical route, how does that work?
The recommendations for pharmaceutical is always to start with a diuretic, because although we talk about being well hydrated, hypertensive patients tend to hold on to fluid, especially if there's increased salt intake associated with that. So the diuretics help you get rid of excess fluid, excess blood volume. There's also a difference between being hydrated and what your blood volume is. Those are two different things. We want to decrease the pressure within the blood vessels themselves. Other antihypertensive agents, calcium channel blockers, these are medications that relax the muscles in the blood vessel walls to make them more compliant, more reactive. The other frontline drugs are called ACE inhibitors, which is the acronym for angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors, and ARBs, which are angiotensin receptor blockers. Those are all things that, again, help to relax the blood vessels and lower your blood pressure. They also lower the stress on the heart wall as it's pumping against the higher blood pressure. The biggest problem with medication is compliance.
Well, are there side effects that make people, what's causing this resistance?
Yeah. A couple of things. Number one is if you're on multiple medications, and there are plenty of studies that show the more medications you're on, the less compliant you become. 4 medications or more, you're less than 50% compliant. Higher number of medications you go, you even become less compliant with medications. Also, in elderly patients on fixed income, there's copays. Copays can add up to a lot of money for the patients, and they just can't afford it. And as you already mentioned, is side effects. Obviously, Google is a great place to go for information.
Dr. Google.
But, you know, I make a joke that if I prescribe this medication, this patient's going to start having side effects before they even fill a prescription, because they expect to have side effects from the medications. You know, it made me nauseous when I took it once. So it also could have been the acidic food you had the other day. You know, is it really from the medication? Often the initial side effects abate with time and tolerance. And also, if I was to be given a choice between heart attack, stroke, and death or side effects, I'd pick side effects. I think I'd rather deal with side effects than lifestyle altering or life-ending consequences of hypertension.
Can hypertension be reversed if you're sticking with your lifestyle changes and your medication?
Can it truly be reversed? You know, I think that's a very good question. I think the more realistic goals are control, you know, because the damage that occurs to your end organs, your brain, your heart, your arteries, your kidneys, that's permanent changes. That doesn't go away. You know, usually by the time you have the major systemic effects and end organ effects of hypertension, you know, the cat's already out of the bag. I think that the more realistic goal is to, number one, control the blood pressure, and number two, do everything you can to prevent progression of the systemic effects of hypertension.
Are there any kind of surgical interventions that can lower hypertension?
And the answer is yes and no. It's actually something we've known for a long time. What I spoke about before was the neurologic connection between the brain and the kidneys, this kind of feedback loop. The kidneys talk to the brain talks to the kidneys. And it's that feedback loop that can get out of whack. It's part of the sympathetic nervous system, the stuff that we don't have voluntary control over. Now, we've known from actually some quite radical surgeries that were done back in the 1950s that if you do what's called a sympathectomy, major surgery to cut those nerves, it was associated with a tremendous drop in blood pressure. It was also associated with a very high rate of morbidity and death.
I was going to say, yeah, you cut those.
It was not. It's not an acceptable treatment.
Good news, you don't have hypertension.
Good
anymore.
News, you don't have any.
Because you did.
Exactly. So that wasn't a realistic option. But again, nature has given us a way of getting at those nerves non-surgically through a procedure, which is called renal denervation. What happens is those nerves run along the aorta, and then they run along the branch vessels to the kidneys. The nerves are kind of arborized, if you will, or circular around the arteries as they go out to the kidneys.
You've got kidney nerves running up into your heart.
Into your brain.
Into your brain, but around your aorta, you said.
Yeah, these nerves sort of surround the artery, but kind of loosely. Then as you get to the kidneys, the nerves that are dedicated in that feedback loop with the brain become a little bit more tightly arranged around the arteries to the kidneys. And as you get out to the branch vessels that go to the kidneys, they become very tightly arborized or surrounding the arteries. Now that we have catheter-based interventions, you know, we can do stents, open up blocked arteries. We can do catheter-based treatment of valves, you know, putting in valves through a puncture in the arteries in the groin. We can get at those nerves non-surgically. What renal denervation actually is, for lack of a better word, burning out those nerves. We have two devices currently available. There are a number under investigation. One uses what's called radiofrequency ablation. Radiofrequency is directed at those nerves to literally burn out those nerves. The other is high-frequency ultrasound, which, again, is directed at those nerves and burns out those nerves.
Don't you need all your kidney nerves to be working properly?
When that feedback loop is out of control, no, you don't need all of them. Okay, there's those nerves, in effect, are working too well. So we need to ablate them
or get rid of them. So are you kind of weeding among the nerves?
It's not directed specifically at one nerve. The idea is actually to deliver that energy circumferentially around the artery to get the bulk of the nerves to interrupt that feedback loop. Now, understand, it's not only that feedback loop that is contributing to the blood pressure. It's just one aspect. Even a blockage in the artery to the kidney can cause your blood pressure to go up. That may sound paradoxical, but kidneys themselves are able to sense what the blood pressure is. And the kidneys can produce substances that raise your blood pressure. So if there's impairment of blood flow to the kidney, I'm getting off this subject a little bit of renal denervation, on the other side of that blockage, the blood pressure is lower. So the kidney says, uh-oh, the blood pressure is lower. I got to raise the blood pressure. I got to help raise the blood pressure. So it releases chemical substances into the blood that raise your blood pressure. That feedback loop that we're talking about is just one of the contributing factors to management or to the body's control of your blood pressure, I should say. So it's certainly not what would be considered a cure-all for hypertension. What it is an adjunct. Most of the time, it's not an immediate reduction. We'll follow those patients closely afterwards. It's not like, okay, tomorrow I go from 4 meds to 2 meds. It's generally a reduction in the blood pressure over time. So we'll monitor them closely and either reduce their medications or take away medications as we see their blood pressure fall. So far, the effects appear to be fairly durable out to 3 to 5 years. Beyond that, we really don't know yet. Most hypertension is what we call primary hypertension. It occurs for all these reasons, but without a specific cause, something that made the blood pressure go up. Also, when we're evaluating a patient, especially one that has very accelerated blood pressure, rule out causes what we call secondary hypertension. You have a problem with your thyroid that's driving up your blood pressure. You have a problem with your adrenal glands that's pumping out substances that are too much adrenaline or cortisol that's driving up your blood pressure. You know, a number of things that can contribute to what we call secondary hypertension.
So when you're monitoring somebody who's got like primary and suddenly there's a change, when you say accelerated, it's like something happened here.
Something happened here, and you need to rule that out as well. And one of those secondary causes is what I mentioned is a blockage or what's called renal artery stenosis, a blockage in the blood flow to the kidney. So before you consider anything like renal denervation, you would fix that blockage first to normalize the blood supply. That might take care of it itself.
And how does that happen?
Just as we can open up blocked arteries in the heart or in the legs, we can open up blocked arteries to the kidneys as well.
What kind of experience is that for a patient?
Putting a stent in is actually pretty benign. It's actually a very quick and easy procedure that could either be done from the leg or even the wrist. Most of the time, it's an outpatient procedure. The patients, other than a little numbing at the puncture site and a little sedation, the patients really don't experience much of anything.
So what, you're going through the wrist to get to the kidney?
Actually, in some cases, it's easier to get to the kidney from the wrist than from the leg. Our devices are small enough that we can get to those. And right now, when we do renal denervation, it's done from the leg, although devices are now looking for catheters are going to help us do it from the arm as well. The truth is renal denervation, when it occurs, the patients do experience discomfort, kind of an aching, cramping feeling in their back that, to be honest, can be intense, but we usually sedate the patients very heavily. Sometimes we'll even put them asleep with a medicine called propofol so they don't experience anything at all. By putting asleep, I don't mean putting on a breathing tube. They just lights out, turn it off, lights on, and they're awake again.
What's recovery like?
From the standpoint of the kidney, there's no recovery. Recovery is like with any other angiographic procedure, whether it's at the leg or the arm, just nothing strenuous for a couple of days, so you don't have any bleeding at the puncture site. You know, don't play tennis when you have a puncture in your wrist, or don't do any heavy lifting when you have a puncture in your groin.
Who then is a candidate for renal denervation?
Several steps. One is confirm that the patient really does have really resistant or uncontrolled hypertension.
That's not responding to all of the other...
That they're being compliant with their medications, that they're doing all the lifestyle changes, and their blood pressure is still high. Second step is to rule out any secondary causes of hypertension, like the thyroid or the adrenal glands or renal artery stenosis or blockage in the kidneys. And if you ruled out all those other things and they're still severely hypertensive, and it's usually at least 3 or 4 medications that are being compliant with, then they become a candidate for renal denervation. Whether or not those guidelines change in the future, you know, lifetime of pharmacologic management, side effects of the drugs that people just can't tolerate, or not to mention the cost of being on high blood pressure meds for 30, 40, 50, 60 years, also needs to be considered in that equation. So will those guidelines change over time? Perhaps. But for right now, that's our current guidelines.
What stage of hypertension would a patient be at? I mean, if you just kind of said, no, I don't feel like taking these drugs anymore, you know, because it's got me at, what, stage one, I don't like it. You know, what stage of hypertension is your cutoff?
Typically, it's going to be, before we do renal denervation, it's going to be blood pressures, you know, 150, 160 and higher.
Well, give me then your top 3 steps to take for your blood pressure.
Weight loss, exercise, and diet. Those are the 3 most important things you can do on your own. Add to that seeing your physician regularly, being compliant with your physician's recommendations, adjuncts to managing your blood pressure. If you're truly hypertensive, I think you should be checking your blood pressure weekly. If your blood pressure is not controlled, until it gets controlled, I think you need to see your a physician more frequently, every 2 to 3 months. Once you're under control, every 6 month checkup is fine. But again, it's not like a cold. It doesn't go away. Once you have high blood pressure, you have high blood pressure or the risks for high blood pressure for life. So it's a lifelong disease management program, not just a one and done.
That's Deborah, interventional cardiologist, Dr. Richard Kovach. Join us next month for another conversation about a health issue affecting you or a loved one that you'd like to understand more fully. As always, the podcast drops the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Deborah Doctor interviews at DeborahHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at DemandDeborah.org.